What's up, Falcons fans, and welcome to episode 12 of Talking Birdie, an Atlanta Falcons podcast, powered by sportstalkatl.com. I am your host, Matt Carroll. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Carroll. Carroll spelled K-A-R-O-L-Y. I've got Jake Gordon and Alex Lord from the Sports Talk ATL team with me as always. And on tonight's episode, we will close our tour through the NFC South. 2 weeks ago, we started it with Carolina Panthers and Billy Marshall breaking down the Carolina Panthers and their upcoming 2021 season. Last week, we had the man, the myth, the legend, Trevor Sikkema from the Draft Network talking all things Tampa Bay Buccaneers and their title defense in 2021. And this week, we will close with the hated New Orleans Saints, the four-time consecutive NFC South champions. We'll ask our guest, can they make it five in a row? In my opinion, if they are to do that, it's going to take Sean Payton's greatest coaching performance in his career. And so, again, we got a great guest for you this week. So without further ado, let's bring him in here. He is SI Saints News lead writer and reporter, John Hendricks. John, thanks so much for taking some time out to join us tonight. How you doing? How you enjoying your offseason? What's going on, man?
Hey, thanks for having me, first of all. And I'm doing good, just trying to avoid some of this heat. But living in New Orleans, it's kind of a moot point, right? And you just can't. It's no matter what. Yeah. I go out and check the mail, and I'm puddle of sweat. So, but other than that, I'm enjoying my offseason. It's crazy to think the training camp's almost here. I'm going to have my kind of last gas this weekend, go take the family to the beach. And then next week's kind of the big dance, if you will. So thanks for asking.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. This offseason has kind of been a whirlwind. Certainly the Falcons have gone through their own troubles. And you can probably guess where I'm going to start the conversation off with you tonight. I'm sure you've covered it quite a bit on the site and on various podcast appearances. But for the first time in 15 years, the New Orleans Saints will not be led by quarterback Drew Brees. And they have an open quarterback competition. They have Jameis Winston, who's entering year two in the Saints system. And on the other side of it, they have Sean Payton's pet cat, Taysom Hill. And Taysom Hill, obviously, we saw a sample size with him as he filled in for Drew Brees this past year as he battled injuries. But from an outsider's point of view, it would seem like Jameis Winston has a better chance this year to become that starting quarterback. You know, he has an off season now, with the playbook. Sean Payton has an off season to kind of scheme an offense around him. And, you know, Jameis Winston represents that traditional pocket passer that, in my opinion, still, I believe, wins out in today's NFL. But I want to ask you, John, and get your thoughts. How do you see this playing out? Do you see Jameis Winston being the guy, you know, being that he's a more traditional pocket passer? Or, you know, as I said, somewhat jokingly, but somewhat not, you know, Taysom Hill is Sean Payton's pet cat. We know how much he values him in this offense. Do you think there's still a chance Taysom Hill could be the QB1 for an entire season? How do you see this playing out?
Yeah, so this is what I would say first and foremost. And look, the thing is, what people got to realize on this battle is last year, where everything came into confusion, is that Jameis Winston went in the game against the 49ers when Drew Brees got hurt. And so everybody thought, hey, this is Jameis's team. He's the primary backup, right? And so what ended up happening, it was Taysom Hill. And so if you backtrack a good bit, you know, going into this last season, you know, it was more of a promise that Sean had made to Taysom about, you know, giving him a shot and giving him the chance to be the team's backup, right? And Jameis was going to be the guy that was more game ready, if you will, when it came down to it with what happened to Drew. And then with Taysom, he got his audition, right? And his four games that he had, you know, you can't really use the Denver game as a sample size just because of what happened was so unprecedented. And he had two games against Atlanta and you had the one against Philly. The one against Philly was not good. The two against Atlanta were mixed at best. You know, I think what you see from Taysom is the fact that he was struggling with his progressions, struggling with his reads. He did not look comfortable in the pocket. He missed on a few throws. And, you know, look, he didn't use his best weapon in Alvin Kamara. So, you know, I think he has a lot of growing up to do this offseason, and he has a lot to prove here. And so I've been saying this since last December that, look, I think this is Jameis's job to lose. If you ask me right now on a confidence level, I give him a 98% chance to win this job. I expect Taysom Hill to challenge. I expect him to be better. They've both been really good sports about this whole entire competition. You know, Sean Payton is obviously been noncommittal on who's going to do. You're going to hear a lot of things that some people believe it's Hill. Some people believe it's Winston. If you ask the national media, they think it's Hill. If you ask local people, we think it's Winston, right? And so it's going to boil down to who can have that chemistry, who's going to take charge of the locker room. And look, I don't expect this battle to be easy. You know, there's going to be a lot of things that get overanalyzed, like, you know, Jason, I'm bringing them together, right? That's just kind of how crazy it gets. But Jameis misses on one pass, and then, oh my God, let's go dissect it. Or Taysom does so great on one practice day. And you know how it is. People blow camp and practices and all this crap. And I think really what it boils down to, who manages the game situations the best? And you only have 3 preseason games here. And, you know, I expect them to have extensive looks at Jameis and at Taysom. And I think whoever runs the best there, you know, Sean Payton's already said that 3rd preseason game is going to actually be a real game. It's not going to be one where traditionally, you know, last preseason game, you trot in all your backups reserves and find out who's going to make the last 5 to 10 roster spots on your team. But look, I think this is Jameis's job to lose. I really expect him to come out with a renewed sense of passion. And here's the thing. He's not going in there trying to be Drew Brees. Neither is Taysom Hill. They're just trying to be the best version of themselves. And, you know, Jameis has a real opportunity in front of him. And let's keep in mind, both of them are playing for that next contract. So I'd expect to see a lot of good things from camp. But, you know, I expect this decision to not be something quick and easy.
It's funny, you accidentally said Jason, but I think we'll actually have a lot of Jason this year. I think it's going to be a lot of sub packages with Taysom Hill. If I do know Sean Payton, he'll get him involved somehow.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't be surprised there either. You know, it just really depends on how it plays out, because if they roll into it like what they did last year, then that would mean you're either turning into rookie Ian Book being their backup guy on game days if they continue to utilize Taysom in a reduced or diminished role, if you will. And then, you know, you've got Trevor Siemian on the roster, and hopefully it doesn't ever come to that. But, you know, I think they invested a lot in Book, and I think they believe in him, and he could be the guy that's going to get that 3rd quarterback opportunity. But, you know, that begins the question, right, is if Jameis does win this battle, you know, what does Taysom's role look like? I don't know if they'll use him at tight end as much. I don't think he'll play special teams as much, but I think they will have some packages in place for him. And, you know, you might see a 90-10 split or a 95-5 split on the reps and offense.
Yeah, I mean, because Taysom Hill did have a package in the offense when Drew Brees was the full-time quarterback, right? So, you know, you could see, I would expect to see some short yardage stuff, some gadget plays. So, you know, again, I'm with you. I think Jameis Winston, it's his job to lose, but I do think that sets up still for Taysom Hill to be a featured element in this offense. You know, outside of Michael Thomas and Kamara, what other weapons really strike fear into opposing defenses? So, I mean, again, do you disagree with Taysom Hill having a role in the offense? Like, is he just the backup then if he loses the job?
I think it's tough to keep him off the football field. And, you know, I even look at the opposite side of the field, like CJ Gardner-Johnson. Guy's built up a reputation, but he's good at what he does, right? And he's such a coveted asset. And that's why the Saints roll usually 2 linebackers and put him on the field. It's just hard to keep him off the field. And so Taysom Hill, you know, I think they'll have some things carved out. I think that they're going to make some things try to work just because – you know, they want to keep them on their toes, keep them guessing. You just don't know what was going to happen when it comes out to it. And you alluded to it, and I think it's fair, is that outside the weapons of Thomas and Kamara, it's a lot unknown. And I might throw in Latavius Murray, too, because he's very underrated. He's a great complement back to Alvin Kamara. But, you know, with their wide receiving threats, Tre'Quan Smith, everybody's talked about this is his breakout season. That's been what I've heard for 3 years, right? And so this is a guy who's never had 500 yards in a receiving season. Marquez Callaway was great as an undrafted rookie last year. He's a guy that hopefully gets more progression. Deontay Harris is more for his special teams return ability. And then you roll to Adam Trautman, his 2nd year. He's got a lot on his plate as the guy at tight end. You know, you had Jared Cook and Josh Hill. They're out of the equation now. You pick up Nick Vinette from free agency. And so it's a lot of uncertainty for this Saints team. And I think that's what's puzzling. And when you see people throw out record predictions like a 9-win season, I think that's kind of where they kind of look at that is saying, hey, there's just a lot of unknowns with the Saints team. I think as long as they have Sean Payton, they have a fighting chance. But, you know, they have a great core. They have a great offensive line. They have some great defensive pieces. But, look, it all hinges on this quarterback play and how you can get others involved that are just not Kamara or Michael Thomas.
Yeah, John, sticking with the personnel a little bit, but switching sides, I want to get some insight into Terry Fontenot. You can tell us a little bit about, you know, his time as a pro scout in New Orleans. And then, you know, dealing with Atlanta's cap situation, the free agent class that Atlanta brought in this year, I don't think is very indicative of what Fontenot maybe values entirely, because he was really cash strapped, so he didn't really have as much flexibility as maybe he did in New Orleans. So, you know, going over the free agent class, and what do you think he really values? You know, it could be intangibles, physical abilities. What are the physical abilities? Just talk a little bit about Fontenot.
Well, I'll say this. If there's one team I didn't want him to go to, it would have been the Falcons, and that's where he lands up. And it's good for him. The guy is amazing. I just can't say enough good things about his character and what he represents. And the thing is, he's so humble. I mean, you probably saw that, you know, he was just so thankful for the opportunity he got from Mickey Loomis and such. And so, you know, at the Saints, he was director of player personnel, the pro personnel. And, you know, he was responsible for bringing in a lot of guys and veterans and stuff. And some were great and some were outstanding. I mean, there's just a good track record of guys, you know, even thinking about a guy like Kevin Williams, who was at the end of his career, made such an impact on the Saints, you know, for that. I mean, it's guys that they do their homework on, the Janoris Jenkins, guys like that, that you wouldn't think. Even Eli Apple was a great success story, and that was acquired via trade. But, you know, I think for him, you can't judge Terry Fontenot based off of the season. It's just not fair to the Falcons and stuff if you're going to put a label on how he impacts year one. He's a guy that's going to have to build a fix a little bit of a mess here. You know, obviously you've got Matt Ryan. You had to let go Julio Jones. That was, you know, definitely tough to see for this team, but you got good pieces to build around. You know, Matt Ryan's still a great quarterback. You know, you've got Calvin Ridley. You've got a lot of interesting pieces that you add. Kyle Pitts is expected to be extremely good. I think what hinges here is I think with Atlanta, you don't know what to expect, but with Fontenot, he's a guy that's going to build from within. He's a guy that's going to look for good, high character talent. Some of the intangibles, like you said, but ultimately people that want to be in this building and want to play football and want to bring a winning culture, that's going to be the first and foremost thing. It's not about the me attitude. It's not about the, you know, let's get caught up in our egos or anything. He's going to look for guys that's going to help put this team together, build a good nucleus, and then obviously grow. So, you know, you may not see too much from this year just because of how the Falcon situation was, but man, I'm telling you, in a few years, it wouldn't surprise me to see some of his success and just how much he's going to be able to do with that franchise.
Yeah. A little follow-up to that. And this might be just like you said, it's been one off season, so it's really hard to, you know, judge Fontenot, but what do you think he could possibly take away from Mickey Loomis, and what do you think he would do differently than Mickey Loomis? I know, you know, Loomis has his own way of going about things. I just want to know, what do you think he could take with him to Atlanta that Loomis taught him, and what he might do differently, if you even know? Again, it's just one off season, so who really knows?
I would tell you this, that he's learned a lot. You know, Fontenot started as a marketing intern, right? And so the thing is, nobody could be happier for him getting a promotion than Mickey Loomis. I mean, this is a guy that just came in here, blood, sweat, and tears, and just absolutely just bought into the culture and just has been able to really, you know, pair himself and work well. And I think one of the things that really honed in for Loomis and what Fontenot can emulate is the fact that the relationship between Sean Payton and Mickey Loomis is just like bread and butter. I mean, these guys go great together. It's more of a, hey, I want this player. Can we make it happen? You know, and obviously Kai Harley is their salary cap guy, their guru, if you will. And so, look, there's a lot of good things that he brings to the table. And, you know, it's a good thing from this front office that they're starting to see a lot of things kind of cultivate for this team. And, you know, you see Dan Campbell get promoted, Aaron Glenn get promoted. You see Joe Lombardi go onto the Chargers and such. And then Fontenot was just one of those guys that, man, I think, you know, there's not enough people that you can say aren't happy for him. And look, I think that he's going to end up coming into this role, try and embrace and really build that, establish a relationship with the coaching, and really try to build this thing together. And I think it's the best thing that he could do is build that trust relationship with the coach, try to build this thing, get the players that you want to get, and then just kind of go from there, see what happens, and then see if it all comes together.
Yeah, you talk about him starting as a marketing intern. It's easy to see how he worked his way up. You know, I don't mean this in a negative way, but he's a smooth talker. You know, he's very well spoken. He seems to always say the right things, and that can take you a long way. And also, I'm going to follow up on that. John, I just want you to know this is probably the nicest thing I've ever said to a Saints fan. Maybe the only nice thing I've ever said to a Saints fan. But, you know, we've seen the Falcons and the Saints since the Falcons went to the Super Bowl go in two completely directions. Completely different directions. And I think the biggest reason is probably the 2017 draft. The Falcons don't have anybody from that class left on their roster, headlined by the wonderful Tack McKinley. And the Saints had one of the best draft classes, I think, probably in the past 20 years, at least in my recent memory. You have Marshawn Lattimore. You have Ryan Ramczyk, who just signed a huge deal. Marcus Williams, he's playing on the franchise tag, but obviously Marcus Williams, super talented. Alvin Kamara, and then you even find guys like Alex Anzalone and Trey Hendrickson. So really, to sum that up, who do you think was the best pick out of that draft?
Yeah, before I answer that, I'll tell you too, another one. They also drafted Al-Kadeem Muhammad, and yeah, he didn't latch on, he didn't finish, but man, he's done great things with the Colts. And so he's one of those missing pieces, but they had drafted him originally, and he's doing extremely well for them. So that's just another one that, you know, he just didn't really have a role here. But look, for me, I would tell you, obviously Kamara is probably the easy answer just because of what he's brought to the table. I think Ramczyk is probably the top answer here. You know, I think there's arguments to be made. I want to say it's Marcus Williams. The guy has gone through so much in his career, and he's a guy that, and you could look at Kamara too. He had a down year, not last season, but the season before, because he was playing hurt, you know, but fans were reading too much in his body language. He didn't want to be here, all this crazy nonsense. Right. And look, he came, he got rewarded with a contract extension. He absolutely just killed it last season. You know, I had unfortunate, you know, joy to go up against him in my fantasy championship, so I got blown out of the water, right? But, you know, I think he's done extremely well for himself. But, you know, for me, Marcus Williams is a guy that obviously when you think about him, you think of the one play, the Minneapolis Miracle, right? And that's just kind of whatever solidifies in your mind when you think of him. And if it's not that, I think about the George Kittle play where Kittle just absolutely bullied the entire Saints secondary and was able to help set up and win that game for him, right? But, you know, this is a guy who's knows where he had struggles, and he's improved those struggles. So, I mean, you know, he was great as a rookie. Second year kind of dipped, and, you know, obviously his third year was a little bit rocky, if you will. But, you know, he's overcame. And last year, you know, they lose Von Bell, they bring in Malcolm Jenkins. The first several games of the season was horrendous for the Saints secondary. I mean, they were getting torched, you know, play after play with just deep balls. And I mean, it was horrible because you're like, man, are they just going to ever figure this out? But I think what's the most appreciative about that is that the fact that Marcus Williams figured it out, and that became, you know, one of the top two safety tandems in the league. And so I think for him, you know, it's a matter of when he's going to get a big cash contract. But, you know, Kamara and Ramczyk's probably the easy answers. But I tell you, Marcus Williams is deserves a lot of praise and a lot of accolades for what he's brought to the table for the Saints team.
John, you mentioned Kai Hartley a bit ago, and I'm glad you did because, you know, I'm a big salary cap buff. And I think another reason, you know, in addition to that 2017 draft class, you know, in addition to that, why the Saints have been successful the last couple of years, I think it's how they've been able to kind of maneuver around the salary cap. You know, some people like to say the salary cap is a myth. You know, I'm of the mind that it's not, but there is ways to manipulate it and kind of use it to your advantage. And the Saints do that probably better than any team in the NFL. And, you know, they do stuff that teams don't even think of doing. I'm reminded of the unprecedented sign and trade that they wanted to pull off for Jadeveon Clowney a couple years ago, and the NFL kind of had to step in and veto it. Otherwise, they probably would have pulled that off. But tell me about Kai Hartley's role within the organization and how much credit should he be given for what the Saints do with the salary cap? Because I know there were some rumors that Terry Fontenot was trying to lure him away to Atlanta, and the Saints kind of shut that off. You know, what's going on behind the scenes there? Is Hartley kind of, is there a kind of a handshake agreement with him and Mickey Loomis to be the GM in waiting? Talk to me about Kai Hartley in New Orleans.
Yeah, he's definitely the numbers guy, the crunch it. And I mean, he's just been amazing things. And, you know, you get all these things like a fictitious Taysom Hill contract that's like $140 million. They could put any number on it, but right, everybody's like, what in the heck are they doing? And all this stuff. But, you know, they've just found creative ways to help manipulate the cap. And the thing is, the way the Saints operate is they obviously are banking that the salary cap is going to go up every year. And obviously with COVID, things changed for them. But, you know, look, all you heard was they're $100 million over and there's no way in hell they're going to be able to do it. And, you know, they made some obvious cuts. They made some tough cuts. I think out of everything that happened, you know, Janoris Jenkins was the one that hurt the most, having to let him go. But, you know, look, he's able to manipulate things. They're able to do a lot of things, and it just comes with the education. And, you know, ultimately, you don't have that unless you have a GM that supports you on it, and obviously an owner that supports you on it, and just kind of being able to run it their way. So whether they add ghost years to a contract, whether it's, you know, they call it voidable years, whether you tweak some of the bonuses involved, whatever it is, they've just always found a way. And so for him, I would expect it that, you know, sooner rather than later that you're going to see him in more of a leadership role. And, you know, again, he can't stay there forever. Right. And unless, you know, he's absolutely that happy, but, you know, look, I would expect him to get some more looks. You know, Jeff Ireland's a guy that people forget a lot about too on this team. And I think he's in line for a GM role soon, just because of what they've been able to accomplish. But Harley, man, he's the numbers guy. He's like the rain man, if you will, for the Saints salary cap. And he's just made it happen year after year, because I've heard it for, I don't know how many off seasons, that, you know, the Saints can't do it because of the cap. And, you know, there's some merits to some of the things that they can't do, but, you know, even way they were able to manipulate Marshawn Lattimore's contract to help alleviate some cap space. I mean, they went from basically nothing to $11.6 million, and they have 5 roster spots available. You know, they had Quan Alexander on a visit yesterday, on Tuesday, that is. And, you know, you're still looking at potentially a veteran corner. And then, you know, obviously we're paired to Xavien Howard if they decide to, the Dolphins are dumb enough to try to trade him. So, you know, that could be another thing that they try to do. But, you know, there's just always a way that they've found, and they don't stop it. Well, we just can't do it because the numbers don't work, because there's multiple ways that it can work, and they find the ways to do it.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about David Onyemata. So you say, you know, if they could do something, they will. Malcolm Brown's gone. Sheldon Rankins is gone. Onyemata's gone for 6 games for that PED violation. And he's a big impact player for that defensive front. What do you think they'll do there? You think they'll rely on, you know, talent in-house, maybe get somebody from free agency, a veteran, or what do you think they're going to do there?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's definitely concerning. You know, Onyemata is more of that pass rushing specialist. And look, him and Malcolm Brown did so well together. And, you know, with those 2 games that, or it was either 2 or 3 games Brown had missed. The first one that he missed against was Philly, and they just absolutely got tore up on the ground. You know, that's where that vaunted, silly 100-yard rusher stat had died, or whatever you want to call it, that had held up for like 50 games or some craziness. And, but, you know, as far as it goes, going into this year, the plan was David Onyemata was going to be that guy, you know, kind of that pass rushing specialist, if you will, and he was able to stop the run, do so many good things for you. And then they were going to bank on using a rotation of Shy Tuttle and Malcolm Roach, some of their younger guys. And Tuttle was more of a nose tackle guy, and so is Roach. But, you know, now this forces their hand, because losing him is horrible. It's a bad look. It's a bad space to be in. And now you're suddenly looking at, well, let's see down the depth chart and see what we got. And, you know, there may be some answers there, but nobody knows. It's just throwing stuff at a wall. You know, you got Josiah Bronson, a guy they picked up, undrafted guy. Ryan Glasgow, he played a few games for him last year. But nobody's going to reproduce what Onyemata has been able to do on their roster. And so I think they got to look at free agency. You know, Jarrell Casey is a guy they talked to. I think Geno Atkins is a guy that could potentially fit. You know, you only need him for a few games. I don't know if he's the best answer because, again, you're getting a version of Geno Atkins that's not his prime, you know, hasn't been for a while, right? And so I would expect him to look at free agency. And you know, again, you got a shorter window to do all this now, but I don't think the answer's on the roster, and that's a huge hole for the Saints team to fill.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Falcons don't play the Saints in the first 6 weeks, so Falcons fans, you won't benefit from this loss. But, you know, it sounds like it could have been the worst possible place it happened outside of possibly cornerback. Y'all are pretty thin at cornerback, correct?
Yeah, that's a nut situation in itself, right? I mean, Marshon Lattimore is their top option, and we still don't know if he's going to face league discipline. You know, I think that he'll probably be gone a game or two under the personal conduct policy. It depends on how that legal case plays out. You know, it's just sometimes no news is good news, but, you know, we've seen the NFL take months for it to conclude, and then here it is a couple weeks before the season, and you find out the guy's suspended. So outside of that, their second corner option is bleak. I mean, you got Patrick Robinson, a veteran guy. He's not built for a 17-game season. You know, he's a guy that everybody's going to put on the roster bubble. Ken Crawley, he's a guy that, you know, he's a veteran, but, again, he's not a solid option. PJ Williams makes a move to safety. That's more where his role is. He could play, but I don't think that's a really solid foundation there. And then you got the rookie in Paulson Adebo, and, you know, he's one that you're going to have to keep an eye on, and I don't think they'd be afraid to roll him in to start. But, look, one bad injury can really derail this group, and the depth behind it is pretty paper thin. So I think it's one of the areas of the roster that I am absolutely most concerned about. And, you know, I think they can get by in a lot of other areas, but that second corner option, man, I'm telling you, it's just a very sickening thought to think that they won't have Lattimore, and then they're going to roll in with some kind of Ole guys that aren't just up to the standards and up to par where they need to be.
Wow, maybe we have more in common than I thought we did.
Look, I see this from a you know, look, you got to be, when you cover this team, you can't just have a Saints hat on. You got to look at the real stuff, man. You know, it's just, and that's how I feel like I got to. And, you know, I'm not afraid to call a duck when it comes down to it, man. So,
I'm glad you brought up Paulson Adebo. He was my favorite pick of y'all's. I wanted the Falcons to get him. I thought it was a fantastic pick. The rest of them, I like the Peyton Turner pick, but I feel like with how, you know, draft capital poor they were, I feel like they could have traded back, still got him and maybe got some more picks. Hated the Pete Werner pick. I hated the Ian Book pick, and that's not me being biased. I don't think Ian Book's an NFL quarterback, but I want to know what you think about it. What do you think about these guys?
Yeah, I think it's truly a wait and see type thing. You know, Peyton Turner, I like a lot of what he brings to the table. I like his attitude, but, you know, you already had Cam Jordan. Everybody knows him. You have Marcus Davenport, who's supposed to be primed for a really killer year. I mean, this is the first offseason program that he's really been able to participate in. So you're looking for big things. You bring in Tano Passignon as a free agent. You have a big leap that you're expecting from Carl Granderson. But, you know, now it gets a little bit intriguing because with the loss of Onyemata, there could be a situation where they roll some guys inside. I mean, it's not uncommon to see Cam Jordan line up inside. He's done that plenty of times over his career. Maybe Peyton Turner's a guy that you use, but, you know, look, I think it's more of a, you know, people have talked about it and said that's a Davenport replacement. I think he's got more similarities to Cam Jordan. I think he's a Cam Jordan replacement, and only time's going to tell. You know, with all respect to Cam, I think he's still got some great years ahead of him. But, you know, look, I think wouldn't surprise me when down the road that's the direction they decided to go in. But, you know, that's one pick. Obviously, Pete Werner, I wasn't too happy about the pick either, just because especially what was left on the board and what was there. You know, and the Saints just have not had a great track history of developing linebackers that they draft. I mean, Anzalone was average at best. You know, saw him get really exposed in that playoff game against Tampa. They couldn't cover the flats. They couldn't cover the short routes. And that's where Tampa ate him up, right? And so it wasn't a deep ball. It wasn't anything crazy. It was just a short and intermediate stuff. And so, you know, they've always had a problem there. And, you know, obviously I think that's one of the reasons they're bringing in Quan Alexander. I think that he pairs extremely well with DeMario Davis. But Alexander is a guy that you don't know if you're going to get a full season out of him. And so there's always that mystery. But look, I think Warner is one of those. He's kind of like a blue-collar guy that comes in and does his job. I don't think there's anything, you know, flashy there. But, you know, maybe that works for him. But I look at that Alabama game and just saw him just so out of position, different things that just really scared me. And I just can't see that on a football field. And, you know, with the Debo, obviously, I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, I think with the pairing of Chris Richard, you know, did great things with Jadobe Awuzie in Dallas and that secondary. And obviously he knows the Legion of Boom. That's his claim to fame. But I'm excited to see what he can do with a guy like Adebo. And I think he has the most upside. And with Book, you know, I saw what Drew Brees had to say. And I that kind of knew what it is. I didn't want another quarterback. I didn't think that was necessary. I thought they could have got an undrafted guy, but they like him. They like a lot what he brings to the table. They like his toughness, his grit, you know, some of those things. I wasn't in love with that pick, but you know, look, I'm not the front office. I don't make these decisions. And, you know, you can only look at it. And then, you know, the only other one that they had is Landon Young, the offensive tackle from Kentucky. Would surprise me if that's a guy that stays on the roster and is just becomes one of those that just comes up and ends up being one of their better picks of that draft.
I like the Landon Young pick too. You know, I think he has a little bit of guard flexibility. I remember there were two Kentucky linemen. I can't remember if he was the one that could kick inside. But I think they've earned the benefit of the doubt at this point, honestly. So it is a wait and see type thing.
Yeah, John, you mentioned, you know, there's quite a bit of things that, you know, could derail the Saints 2021 season. You know, we talked about Onyemata's absence and the thin defensive tackle depth. We talked about, you know, the uncertainty at cornerback, even with Marshawn Lattimore, I kind of forgot that he was battling some legal trouble. So, you know, that would leave them with pretty much really no starting caliber quality cornerbacks, I'd say, on the roster. But, you know, what's the path in your mind? You know, I talked about it at the top of the show. In my mind, I think it's going to take Sean Payton's best coaching performance to get them, you know, to be a five-time NFC South champion, much less a playoff contender. What's the path in your mind to this team getting to the postseason again, giving all the uncertainty and turnover maybe on this roster?
Yeah, I think for me, I think can they survive the middle stretch of their schedule and can they at least get themselves in position to win, get a wild card? And, you know, I don't see them winning the NFC South. I think Tampa's in there just because it's hard to doubt them, A, because they're Super Bowl champions, and B, the roster turnover. I mean, they barely had any, right? And they've only gotten better. So I would expect the division probably be more in them. But, you know, look, for the Saints, their first set of games aren't really that crazy when it looks like. You don't know if you're going to have Aaron Rodgers in the first game. They got Carolina, New England, the Giants, Washington, and, you know, I think the first part of that schedule bodes well for them. But, you know, you start looking at the middle, you got the Bucks, you got the Seahawks on the road, you've got the Falcons in there, you got Titans who are going to be a better team. You don't know what you're going to get with the Eagles. And then you look at the Bills and Cowboys in back-to-back weeks. And, you know, I guess the thing is everybody wants to believe the Cowboys are Super Bowl contenders no matter what. But, you know, I don't know what you're going to get out of them this year. And so then you're looking at the last several games. You've got three out of the four final games that are against the NFC South opponents. Close the year against the Falcons, which is kind of weird because it's usually Carolina. But then you also have Miami sprinkled in here. So I think for this team, you know, Sean Payton's really got to ensure that he's got the best coaching possible. And I think this is a great opportunity for not only him, it's an opportunity for guys like Michael Thomas. It's a guy's for opportunity for, you know, just so many to take the spotlight because – you know, there's obviously a lazy narrative that, you know, Peyton's only good because of Drew Brees or Michael Thomas is only good because of Drew Brees and all these other things that just kind of, you know, are not true, if you will. And so Sean Payton's an outstanding coach. I mean, there's a reason why when he put Teddy Bridgewater in, the team did extremely well. You know, they did great for the most part with Taysom Hill and as their replacement. So now it's a new era. It's a new regime. It's going to take him and his best coaching for this team to be an actual contender. I don't say Super Bowl. I'm not naive. I think their ceiling is probably 10, 11 wins at best until I see otherwise. But, you know, 9 or 10 – 9 is what Vegas says. I'd slightly take the over, but I'd still have a little bit of hesitation there.
Yeah, you mentioned – roster turnover. And obviously the Bucks had none. And the Saints still had a lot, but it's still a very good roster. Just like you said, 11 wins is, you know, for most franchises, that would be, you know, a hell of a year. The Browns, I think, just won 11 games, and they're acting like they won the Super Bowl. I mean, for real. So it's still a very good roster. And that is a good, easy into my question that for as long as I can remember, it's been Sean Payton and Drew Brees in New Orleans. I mean, it's been centered around the offense. Even if you guys have had a few, you know, elite defenses over the years, do you think that this defense, I've seen DeMario Davis be, you know, speak out about the disrespect and how the defense can lead this team. What do you see the defense being for this team to get to that 10 or 11 win season? So, you know, elite, you know, top 10, just barely average. I mean, I see them almost leading this team to the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they definitely can be the top half of the league. I think that's the bread and butter for me. And look, I said it last year. I believe that they were a top 10 defense at a higher ceiling than that with the top five. There was times that they were able to do it and show it, right? And so they're an underrated defense. I'll say that they don't have household names other than Cam Jordan. That's about it. Maybe Malcolm Jenkins, but, you know, people are starting to catch more on to what DeMario Davis brings to the table. I mean, that's the one guy on defense that if you lost him, that would be trouble beyond belief because of what he does and brings to the table for this team. But, you know, look, I think there are going to be some situations where the defense is going to have to take over some games. They're going to have to create some opportunities. And, you know, I think that they're able to do that. You know, getting after the passer is obviously important. It's fundamental. They've done an exceptional job with Ryan Nielsen, the defensive line coach. Almost got pried away by Green Bay. That just kind of speaks to you, you know, where his track history is going to go, but Saints were able to keep him. And so, look, I think what's most appreciative about this defense is that they've been able to bring in players who aren't these household names, but continue to do different things. And that starts with good coaching. You know, I just believe that you're probably looking at the top half of the defense just because of what they have. Now, again, you got question marks with Onyemata. If they can figure that out, then you might look at starting the top 10 conversation. And if they really figure this second cornerback situation out, I think that this is a team that could be more known for their defense than their offense. I think they still can bring some things to the table on offense because you got Kamara and, you know, he's good for a lot in by himself, no matter who's playing quarterback. But, you know, it certainly would ease the pressure off of whether it's Winston or Hill if the defense is able to get behind and be able to kind of really make some opportunities because their third down defense was tremendous last year. They were able to do so many different things that it wasn't just in, oh, well, hey, you know, they led the league in this, they led the league in that. There was a combination of things of where they were able to get off the field when it counted most and give the offense at least an opportunity, and their third downs just improved. And they were able to make the adjustments. And again, that's good coaching. It comes from smart players because the first half of the season or first couple of games, it's pretty rough watching teams just basically throw it up for a prayer and be able to connect. But, you know, they were able to figure that out. And I think that's where you got to really appreciate it most. Guys like Dennis Allen, maybe he's going to get a coaching job in his future, but I think a lot hinges on what this defense does this year.
Yeah, you mentioned DeMario Davis being a key piece of that defense. And, you know, for Falcons fans who don't know this, Fontenot has been really credited for bringing him in, not reviving his career. Obviously, he didn't teach him or do anything, but, you know, he is thriving in New Orleans. Everybody in Louisiana loves him. I went to LSU, and all of my friends – for I don't know what reason, love him. I mean, he's just that guy. I remember he got fined for wearing some hat for such a good reason. Yeah, for a good reason. And, I mean, I remember being at school and everybody just rallied around him. And I'm not a Falcons fan or a Saints fan, so whenever I look at these two fan bases, I just think they're crazy. but he is an important piece, and I just would – you know, Falcons fans need to know that Fontenot definitely had a big part of bringing him in.
Yeah, Saints Falcons, the best rivalry nobody wants to talk about because they're too busy looking at Cowboys, Redskins, or Steelers and Ravens and all those other ones that don't matter. But, you know, look, I think, you know, with DeMario, again, he's just so so likable. And the thing is, the guy is just so positive, and his it's just catchy when you look at DeMario Davis. And again, you look at Terry Fontenot, a move like that that made, and DeMario is a guy that really just nobody wanted, I guess, you know. And Saints took a chance. They needed a guy there. And, man, he's just been become one of the best Saints pickups. I think he's been the best free agent signing for this team since Drew Brees. And I will absolutely defend that to nobody. Because they've tried at linebacker. They drafted Stephon Anthony. He busted. They tried with Craig Robertson a year. They tried with Manti Te'o. They tried so many different people that just didn't, you know, that were okay. Some of them okay. Some of them weren't good at all. You know, I even remember they had Curtis Lofton for a year and a couple of years. And I think he did a pretty good job too. And, you know, nobody had ever lived up to the expectation at linebacker since Jonathan Vilma until DeMario Davis came on board. And look, he's a guy that got rewarded with a contract extension. You saw what happened with Fred Warner. His contract value is outstanding compared to what he's gotten.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that. I mean, not only a great player, but probably one of the best contracts in football, especially when you look at the linebacker market now, like you mentioned. Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Alex, I'll push back on what you said. You said he didn't need to be revived. You do know he was playing for the Jets, right? He did need to be revived.
Yeah.
That's just part of
Jets
that.
And Browns. Jets and Browns, man.
All right. So I think this is one of our last questions, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask. I'll preface this by saying I'm a card-carrying Michael Thomas hater at any and all times. But this is a serious question, you know, we saw – that the Saints had some trouble. They didn't have much wide receiver depth. And when they ran into Tampa Bay, when they were able to shut down Michael Thomas, you know, the rest of the offense, you know, had issues. And Drew Brees, obviously, you know, towards the end of the year, especially didn't have the arm talent he used to have. He's playing hurt, but you know, he's still Drew Brees at the end of the day. Do you think Michael Thomas can still be, you know, a top flight wide receiver without a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback? Or, you know, do you think there's even some room for improvement with Jameis and his ability to throw downfield?
Yeah, look, I think with Thomas, first and foremost, you know, I think his sample size with Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback proved that Thomas didn't have to rely on Drew Brees to be successful. You know, again, everybody knows him. What they just say, he's the slant guy. And obviously that's not truth. But, you know, I just wish he wouldn't run his mouth so much. That's the biggest thing, because, you know, when you run your mouth and you don't deliver, that's when you get in trouble. And last year was probably a humbling experience for him. And I in a lot of ways, it's probably needed. You know, I mean, again, you get hurt and then you get suspended because you get in a fight with a teammate. You know, again, you got a lot to learn. And I mean, they made him the highest paid receiver at the time. And so for him, he's got to get back to that 2019 form. And again, you know, what concerns me is, you know, we were talking to Sean Payton in minicamp, and we don't know if his ankle is 100%. Is the fact that, you know, look, they're saying he looks good so far. So far, so good was what the comment was. And he's getting tested, making sure. That in itself is really concerning. Hopefully he's good to go, because they got to have 2019 Michael Thomas on this team for an offense to really thrive. Doesn't matter who's playing quarterback. But, you know, for me, the chemistry is what's going to be the biggest thing, because you hear Drew Brees talk about it. Drew didn't throw to players where they – you know, where they were. He threw where they were going to anticipate where they're going to be, you know, and that's where I made so many good connections over the years and took guys like, you know, David Patton at the end of his career and did extremely well. And guys like Marcus Colston that did extremely well. Lance Moore, Devery Henderson, just a whole bunch of guys that were really no-name receivers, right? And so, you know, and respect to them, but, you know, it's just they weren't household names like DeAndre Hopkins or Julio Jones or, you know, all these guys. And so for Thomas, I expect him to have a bounce-back year, but I'm going to tell you right now that ankle not being 100% potentially is a real concern, and those high ankle injuries are nothing to mess around with. And if he's still having problems, you know, months removed from the NFL season, that's going to be a real problem for New Orleans.
You know, John, I've always wondered this, so I wanted to ask you. I mean, you mentioned Michael Thomas and, you know, his propensity to sometimes run his mouth, and there's some other guys on the Saints. There's Cam Jordan. There's even Marshawn Lattimore at times.
C.J. Gardner-Johnson, let's not forget him.
You know, that's least probably the biggest
NFL,
one, right?
Man, I'll just be candid. I cannot stand that guy. But that's what he's doing. Like, that's the point. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they get under the opponent's skin. I mean, it works, but – is that who they are, or do they? I mean, I know Sean Payton kind of has that type of personality. Do they take on the personality of their coach at all? Like, do you think that has anything to do with, you know, them? That's the way they go about their business, because again, it does tend to work at times. Like, what are your thoughts there? Or is that just who those guys are? That's who they've always been, type of deal.
I think they feed a lot of feed a lot off of Peyton. I really do. And you know, Peyton's a guy, obviously we call him Petty Peyton. I mean, he does things. Sometimes it bites him in the butt. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, right? And so I think you see a locker celebrations and stuff. He's a guy who really meshes well with his players. And you know, for whatever reason, they've had some really great locker room moments, some great times. I mean, they buy into what he's trying to do as his culture and for things. And the biggest thing is, if you're going to run your mouth, you better back it up, you know? And I just laugh because you said CJ Gardner-Johnson. I remember that final play in Atlanta where Calvin Ridley didn't go for the ball. He just went to try to punch CJ Gardner-Johnson. I'm like, you just want to know what he says to people, right? And that Javon Wims stuff, just what they say to get under people's skin, right? And so, look, I think they back it up with some good play and good talent, but man, I'm telling you, you got to be careful with some of that, because it does come around sometimes. It does bite you in the butt. But you know, I think it's more of players when they come to New Orleans, when they see what Sean Payton's about, they really buy into him and they really get behind him. And Payton's a guy who supports his players. And you know, you think it's a given across the league that that's how it should be. But, you know, look at Bill O'Brien and what happened with the Texans, right? It's not always the case that people are able to do that. But, you know, look, I think Petty Payton gets they take a page out of his book sometimes.
You talk about it coming back to bite him. Just so you know, every time that you guys lose a playoff game, I take that still shot that he was doing against the Falcons. That's just how it goes, you know.
Yeah. If it's not that one, it'd probably be him doing the skull chant right before they lost that game, right?
I wanted to ask this question. It's for me, probably no listeners are really going to care, but why do the New Orleans Saints not draft LSU players? Is it because, like, the hometown thing, they don't want to get them in trouble? I know there's, you know, I've always heard rumors about that. And I just want to know, is it just – that's just how it, you know, aligns. That's how the draft falls. You know, they have these LSU guys ranked high, and then it comes to their pick and they're gone or whatever it be. Is it more internal or external?
They wanted to take Terrace Marshall, didn't they, John?
Yeah, they wanted Terrace Marshall. I mean, you know, that was one that I could have saw. I know it was a year before that Patrick Queen was a guy that we were, like, salivating for, and, hey, take him when it makes sense, right? The last guy they drafted LSU was Will Clapp. I mean, yeah. Basically, you know, that kind of silenced people saying, oh, they don't draft LSU players. It's not that they don't value it. I mean, they get the most looks at it when it comes to scouting and such, but look, they tend to draft other, you know, other divisions in the SEC or other, not in the SEC, but across the NCAA. And I think it's just one of those things where it just happens that way. I mean, some of the guys in their roster, one, Jalen McCleskey, he's from Tulane. He's getting a shot at a roster, and they got another guy, Deuce Wallace, who's from UL Lafayette. So they do look at Louisiana products for sure. It's just LSU is not always a thing. And I guess, you know, I'm an avid LSU fan too.
Go Tigers.
Man, yeah. And, you know, it baffles me when you see guys like Justin Jefferson just going off, and it's like you see Patrick Queen doing his thing. Just so many of these guys. Quan Alexander was another good one, but Deion Jones, man, it broke my heart to see him go to the Falcons. But man, he's just been he's got to be my favorite Falcon player. You know what I mean? So, you know, just so many of those.
Devery Henderson was an LSU Tiger.
Yeah, he was the last one before.
He was a solid player for them.
Yeah. He did a lot of good things.
I don't think it's any different than, I mean, we get the same thing with Georgia fans. Falcons very rarely take Georgia players. I just, you know, it just doesn't work out sometimes. It doesn't, the stars don't align. But, John, you've been very gracious with your time. We've appreciated all your analysis. Before we get you out of here, we've kind of been asking this question for all the NFC South analysts. You know, this division is going to be interesting, I think, in 2021. You know, I would agree with you. I think the Bucs are a pretty solid bet to win the NFC South. Probably maybe be the number one seed in the NFC playoffs. But outside of that, there's, again, we talked tonight with you about the Saints. There's a lot of uncertainties with the Saints this year. There's certainly a lot of uncertainties with the Falcons. And then you know, even with the Panthers, with the new quarterback and Sam Darnold. How do you see this division playing out? You know, for the longest time, this has been a multiple playoff participant division. Do you think that trend will continue, or do you think this maybe just is a one-horse race in the NFC South? I mean, give us not necessarily record predictions, but what are your expectations, I guess, of this division in 2021 as a whole?
Well, I'd say the NFC is wide open, right? I just think when you look at it, obviously Tampa's the favorite. I mean, you could go across several teams and think that they might have a shot and maybe, but I think Tampa's obviously a clear-cut favorite here. Everybody's going to get on the Dallas train because Dak Prescott's back, and, you know, that's just how it goes when you're a Cowboys fan, I guess. But, you know, look, for the NFC South, look, I think – my question marks with Carolina, and same thing with Atlanta, is what happens defensively? Because you know what happened with Atlanta last year, and defensively, it just was a train wreck. And Carolina, too. I mean, you lose Christian McCaffrey. You don't have Mike Davis there to back up. I think Davis did great for Carolina when McCaffrey went down. But now you lose him. Yeah, they had 3 1,000-yard receivers, but their defense was bad too. I mean, and so I think that's the emphasis, that you got offenses here that can do things with Carolina, Atlanta, but, you know, defensively, what's going to happen there? I think that's the biggest question mark. So look, I think Tampa's going to establish kind of some dominance early. I don't expect them to miss much there. And really, I think it comes down to the three teams. It's New Orleans, Atlanta, probably going to battle it out, try to get a wild card spot. Carolina's tough to figure out. I don't know if I believe in Sam Darnold. I believe in Christian McCaffrey and some of the wide receiver talent and stuff, but I just don't know defensively if they're going to have enough there to really help out. But, you know, there's always that unknown with a new coach and stuff, especially in Atlanta now. You know, it's a different regime. It's a new era, if you will. And so that sometimes produces some good results there. So I would expect them to battle it out. I could see wild cards for Atlanta and New Orleans potentially this year. I think Tampa's going to win the division. Carolina may push, but until I really see anything on the field, it's tough to figure out what's coming out of the NFC South. I mean, they're not going to be like the NFC East last year, I'll tell you that much, but they'll still be respectable. They've got some favorable points on their schedule too. Just a lot of unknowns with the scheduling there, if you will, but it wouldn't surprise me to see, you know, some teams have winning records at the end of the year and can threaten for a wild card, because a lot of the other teams just have a lot of messes to figure out and a lot of unknowns. So, you know, I think the NFC South can be one of the stronger divisions in the conference. But there's still a lot of unanswered questions that we have for just about every team except for Tampa.
So we'll pencil you in for 12 wins for the Falcons. I think that was what I heard.
No, I don't think so, but look, you know, I've never know. You know, I think they're still probably 8 to 10 range would be reasonable. I mean, Matt Ryan's too talented of a quarterback, and they've got so much talent offensively. If they can figure the defensive thing out, I think they'll be really good. Calvin Ridley is a great piece to help build around. I think they've got extra weapons there for sure. Run game, you can lean on Mike Davis. He's a good guy to do it with. And look, again, defensively, you got some good pieces there. Is it enough to go a whole 17-game season? So I think it's a question mark there, but I think they're in the same boat as the Saints right now. And so it's going to really be wait and see, and just be happy football is going to be back and you get fans back in the dome and or the stadium there, which, by the way, is one of my favorite venues to go to. That stadium is absolutely excellent. So I've toured a lot of them over my years, but that one's definitely one of my favorites. But, you know, Atlanta is just going to be better.
Speaking of stadiums, have you guys settled on a naming rights partner yet, or have you heard anything about that?
No, but just the Superdome right now. So, no, they just took the Mercedes-Benz logo off. I think it was maybe a few days ago.
This took 2 or 3 days ago, yeah.
Yeah, and so now we're still waiting to hear. There's no telling. I think was it Caesars that had an interest in it or had bought some maybe naming rights? I can't remember offhand, so – who knows what it's going to be? As long as it's still the Superdome, you know, it's been a lot of different things, you know, but I feel like it'll be something pretty decent.
Yeah, certainly one of the loudest venues. I'd like to make it there. Obviously, going through enemy territory could be kind of dangerous, but certainly would love to catch a Saints-Falcons game. That's been on the bucket list for a while. I've been obviously down to Atlanta for several other games, but again, as John kind of noted before, there's not too many better rivalries in football, and unfortunately it's kind of goes under the radar at times. But Alex, anything you want to add before we get John out of here and let him plug some of his stuff?
Go Tigers. Got some friendly foes there. I like it.
Yeah, so hopefully it's a better season than last year, because last year was painful. But after what Joe Burrow did, I'll take it. I'll take a bad season.
Yeah, that'll last you a couple years, right?
Oh yeah.
I'll be a little happy.
So, John, we appreciate your time. Let the people know, you know, where they can find you on Twitter and what kind of exciting stuff you got coming up at Saints News.
Yeah, and I'll say this too. One of my best friends, he's actually a Georgia fan, so I can kind of get behind Georgia. I just can't get behind, like, Florida. You know, everybody hates Florida.
We can all agree on that. Hates there we go.
See, we can always find common ground to stand on, right? But, definitely check us out at Saints News Network. It's Saints News on Facebook, on Twitter. You can keep up with me. It's at John J. Hendricks. At Hendricks just like Jimmy. That reference sometimes goes a little dated now, I find, but you know, if people know who Jimi Hendrix is, then, you know, no relation, but, check me out there. And then, you know, check all our work out at si.com/NFL/Saints. And, you know, I'll be having some interesting things coming down the pipeline soon too, but you know, I'm in it for full time for the Saints coverage and I'm ready for camp. So if you want to know Saints things and not have a biased take, I'm your guy.
Great. Well, we really appreciate it. Hopefully, maybe we can get together later in the season to preview one of the Saints Falcons games. Guys, anything you want to plug? Sports Talk ATL.
Go ahead, Jake.
No, I'm good. Honestly.
We just got a bunch of stuff coming up for the Hawks. You know, this is a football podcast, but free agency NBA is about to start. The draft's about
draft
to start
next week.
So football's almost here. Stuff. The greatest time of the year. I mean, what's there to be sad about? Football's back, baby.
That's right. All right. Well, everyone, thanks for listening. Enjoy the last week of the off season. So for John Hendricks, Jake Gordon, Alex Lord, I'm Matt Carroll. This has been Talkin' Birdie. Go Falcons. Mm-hmm.